This is ESPN Radio.
It's Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. You can stream us on ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Brooke Pryor, our ESPN Steelers reporter, in about 10 minutes. Get the latest on TJ Watt's status heading into week one. But Chris, all eyes on one of your former teams, team you won a Super Bowl with, in the New York Giants, because it sounds like Saquon Barkley is getting close to being back on the field for them, finally completing in some contact drills, going through that. They're hopeful he's going to be ready for this weekend, Chris. And coming back from injury is always an interesting deal, because a lot of this, I think, is going to fall on the doctors as far as the should he play, because people will look at ACL for a guy that plays a position like running back where they take such a pounding and wonder, is this too much too soon? Chris, in your mind, you look at Saquon Barkley, his physical makeup coming off this injury. Should they be thinking twice about putting him out in the fire already?
No, I don't think they should be thinking twice, Mike. I mean, the reality is that throughout the preseason, throughout training camp, they've kind of gone according to schedule in terms of the timeline that they laid out for Saquon, right? I mean, they had limited contact early on. He was working in drills off to the side, not really participating in any team stuff up until about a couple of weeks ago. They had the joint practices up in Foxborough with the Patriots, and he actually got into the mix and did some team drills, non-contact of stuff, of course, having the red jersey on. And now, as things progress, they're expecting him to be full go as they start game prep tomorrow. So I'm anticipating that we're going to see Saquon Barkley. Now, I don't know what kind of workload we're going to get from him, but I anticipate him being out there week one.
Yeah, I think you got to manage the touches in some way, right? Like, maybe this is more pass than run, because, Chris, we've also spent the majority of the offseason talking about the fact that their plan of addressing the offensive line was off the waiver wire at the end of training camp doesn't seem like the way to go about making sure that certainly your quarterback, who you're still trying to get answers on, gets the kind of material he needs. But also your running back. I mean, Saquon going back to Penn State has never really had much in the way of consistent blocking in front of him. And that's the thing I worry about, Chris. I'd still say, as long as he's good to go and as long as he's cleared, you get him out on that field, because that's what we do. Players play. But I'm very worried about the style of play that's always served him having to be doing too much to overcome that line.
Well, I mean, Bill Parcells used to say this all the time, Mike. All running backs run the same when there's no hole. And that's not very well. And that's too often been the case with Saquon Barkley since he got drafted by the Giants second overall in 2018. Like, this offensive line has not been able to get push at the point of attack. They allow first contact in the backfield consistently, and that makes it hard for Saquon Barkley in that running game to get going. So, again, that's one of those things you do have to be worried about, especially early on. And so maybe you're right. Maybe it ends up being some touches out of the backfield as a receiver. But the great part about Saquon Barkley is he's a home run hitter from anywhere on the field. So you can deploy him in those ways. You can motion him out of the backfield. You can have him line up out wide. But when you start to look at his potential impact on Daniel Jones and the rest of that offense, to me, that's the part that's undeniable. That's the incentive for Joe Judge and company to put him out there. Since Daniel Jones has been here, when he has Saquon Barkley in the lineup, it's been 11 games. He's got 23 touchdowns to 9 interceptions and 269 yards passing per game. With Saquon out of the lineup, Daniel Jones has 12 touchdowns to 13 interceptions and 199 yards passing per game. So you can see the difference in production from your quarterback when Saquon Barkley is out there on the field. Doesn't mean you have to necessarily give Saquon the ball all the time, but just him being out there is a threat to the opposing defense, and hopefully that makes things easier for Daniel Jones and the rest of those skill position players.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Got to enlist some help from some other former beef here. Jeff Saturday, one of our great ESPN NFL analysts and former O-lineman, guy who blocked for plenty of great dudes like Saquon Barkley, says that he actually believes, and he was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning, that the Giants shouldn't play him to start the year.
Sit him. Sit him, man. Until he is 100% and feels game ready, not practice ready. You know, I saw something on the ticker yesterday. Oh, he had a contact practice. Give me a break, man. In the NFL, there ain't no such thing as contact practices anymore, right? That dude took two or three shots. That is the most violent position played in the NFL. He's going to get hit more often, and guys are going after their legs. They're going low. It's very difficult to protect yourself at that position. Give him time. Understand that the longevity of his career is directly affected if you try to put him back early.
Now, Chris, I'd say this. starting at the Broncos, less than ideal with the defense that Vic Fangio and company are going to trot out in all of this. But with the O-line that we just mentioned, it's not going to get any better anytime soon. The situation is not going to become easier for Saquon. So I understand to an extent what Jeff's trying to say here, but if we're talking about getting ready to take game hits, the only thing that's going to get you ready, especially in this league that's taken the preseason and shrunk it and devalued it, the only thing that's going to get him ready is playing games.
No, I completely agree with you. And so I understand where Jeff Saturday is coming from, but I also understand that the Giants can't let their season get away from them early. Because keep it in mind, after Sunday's opener, you have a short week. You're turning around and going down the turnpike to play the Washington football team, a team that has a really good front seven on a Thursday night. So, I mean, I don't know that there's necessarily a soft place to land in terms of when you want to throw Saquon Barkley in the starting lineup. So I just believe that if he's healthy, if there haven't been any setbacks thus far and he's taking reps, then you try to get him out there on the field, recognizing how important he is to his team's success.
It's going to be interesting, too, to see how this all blows back to Dave Gettleman, because we talk so much about Daniel Jones and the quarterback position being one we're trying to judge this year. Chris, I feel like it's almost harder to judge the tenure of Dave Gettleman at this point, right? Like, he's had some hits the way he went about Leonard Williams and that signing. Dexter Lawrence looks great on the defensive line right now. That defense is in a great spot with some of the acquisitions that Gettleman's made. But Andrew Thomas is having a rough preseason after a rough rookie year. Saquon Barkley's been banged up now after you took him at 2 overall. And I still don't understand how we're supposed to get real answers about Daniel Jones, knowing that he's not, like, there's the convenient excuse. I know people are saying, well, they loaded up with Kadarius Toney and Kyle Rudolph and all these weapons on offense. I'm like, there's an easy out here with that offensive line. And I feel like that same thing could be said about Dave Gettleman. It's so hard already to judge GMing. But to do it with this kind of incomplete sample from him is maddening.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we've got a 3-year sample size, and it's not really that good coming from Dave Gettleman. It's not. I mean, the Giants were in contention last year up until week 17, but that's thanks to a terrible division that they were playing in. I mean, historically bad. So, I mean, it hasn't been good in Dave Gettleman's tenure. The Giants have had 4 consecutive double-digit loss seasons. At some point, something about that has to change. And you mentioned it. You're talking about questioning Andrew Thomas and his production, questioning Daniel Jones and what he's become. And then you could also make the argument to question whether or not drafting Saquon Barkley 2nd overall in 2018 was the right move. So, I mean, you're talking about having a lot of draft capital. You're talking about top 10 picks and not necessarily being sold on that being the right decision for the franchise long term. So I think Dave Gettleman is right there on the hot seat with everybody else in the Giants organization. You have to look at Daniel Jones and his long-term future as your quarterback, but then you also have to look at the guy that's buying the ingredients for Joe Judge to make the meal in Dave Gettleman. And I got to tell you, right now, the returns that we've seen from him aren't good.
The ones we just mentioned, Andrew Thomas, Will Hernandez, a guy who was, I think, a 2nd-round pick, Matt Peart, who could be at right tackle for them potentially, Daniel Jones, like on and on down the list. You're right. His heart's been in the right place, like going up and grabbing your quarterback if you think he's there. Drafting offensive linemen is always a great strategy. But at some point, your evaluation's got to come into question if we're going to keep getting results like this. For more on these results, by the way, your former teammate Eli Manning going to be a guest on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max tomorrow at 9:40 a.m., and I feel like you've got to sabotage that and just get him to come on this show instead.
No, that has to happen. We got to get Easy to jump on the show, and that shouldn't be too hard because I can twist his arm a little bit. We're having the 10th anniversary of our Super Bowl 46 team, so if I can't get him on between now and when we celebrate that in October, best believe he's going to be coming on this show shortly thereafter.
There we go. Listen, easy access right there. By the way, like the plug there for the 10th anniversary. Of
you already know.
More impressive Super Bowl victories we've seen in recent memory here. So again, you're going to want to check that out tomorrow. Eli Manning, 9:40 a.m. Eastern. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. With more than 30 unique coverage options available, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Coming up next, though, one star getting ready to return in New York. We'll see if another star is going to be on the field when the Steelers kick off this weekend. We'll head out to Pittsburgh next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk some college football with Harry Douglas in just a little bit, try and figure out what happened to his Louisville Cardinal on the night that he was technically an honorary captain. So, Chris, I feel like he's got to be responsible for that one. He's got to wear the hat with everybody else on this.
Yeah, he's got some explaining to do because what happened last night, it was all bad for the Cardinals. All bad.
Bad news there. But trying to figure out what the news is going to be in Pittsburgh. The Steelers waiting to see what happens with their star pass rusher, T.J. Watt. For more on that, we head to the Goodyear hotline to talk to Brooke Pryor, our star. She covers the Pittsburgh Steelers for ESPN. And, Brooke, as we sit here right now, Tuesday of a game week against the Buffalo Bills, what's the level of confidence inside that locker room that a deal gets done and that T.J. Watt plays this weekend?
I mean, I think it depends on who you listen to. Like, if you listen to Mike Tomlin talk today, he was as forceful as he's been all this entire process, saying that he is optimistic a deal is going to get done with T.J. Watt. And, I mean, you guys know Mike Tomlin. He's not going to give away, like, one iota more than he has to. And this whole time he said, something will happen soon. We're going to let the process play out. But now he's throwing out the word optimistic. So he seems to think that it's happening. The players really would like it to happen. But I think it's now coming down to, do the Steelers want T.J. Watt badly enough to give in to some of his demands, to break some of their traditions and give him maybe more guaranteed money than they typically give guys when they're making these big deals?
And, Brooke, that's what I wanted to touch on, because traditionally the Steelers don't negotiate contracts into the regular season. They also don't like to guarantee money beyond year two in contract extensions. So how dug in are the Steelers in terms of their position, and how could this thing play out with T.J. Watt? How committed is he to taking this approach to getting his money?
You know, I think one thing that I look at that signals that the Steelers might be willing to change some things that they do is, in the last couple of years, or really just this year with the Ben Roethlisberger situation, but they're starting to give these voidable years to guys on tack them on the back of their contracts. And that is not something that they've done in the past. And they kind of went against their longstanding policies to bend those rules. So if they're willing to make exceptions on the voidable years, maybe that signals that there is some thought of, hey, maybe we should modernize the way that we negotiate, the way that we construct contracts. Although, far be it from me to tell the Steelers, one of, you know, the league's all-time great franchises, that they need to modernize and change things. But I think that they're having to really take a long look and figure out, maybe we should do that, because T.J. Watt has not fully practiced all training camp. Mike Tomlin said he expects and anticipates that he'll be back starting tomorrow. And I asked him, I said, well, does that assumption and anticipation come based on a conversation that you had with T.J., or is that just what you think will happen? And he said, well, I'm not going to get into that. But I think that the Steelers are going to have to make some concessions, because Watt makes some good points with, you know, injury guarantees and things like that. Typically, the Steelers have asked their players to negotiate in good faith, or act in good faith, accept offers, accept restructures down the line that gives them more security. But I think that if they want to make T.J. Watt happy, if they want to really show him that he's a cornerstone of this defense, then they're going to have to give a little more than maybe they're comfortable with.
Brooke Pryor, our ESPN Steelers reporter, with us on Canty and Golic Jr. So, Brooke, is there a day that is sort of a zero barrier on this week where we're going to have an answer one way or another for the Steelers to feel comfortable trying to suit T.J. Watt up and put him on the field?
You know, that's exactly what I asked Mike Tomlin. I said, is there a tipping point that he needs to practice? And he said, no, I haven't thought that far. But then he kind of went into this story about Aaron Donald in 2018. Donald holds out for all of training camp, and meanwhile, he saw Donald working back in Pittsburgh, and then he was able to suit up and play week one for the Rams after his extension got done, and said that he didn't miss a beat. Although I believe it took him some time to really get going that season. I think he went maybe the first three games without a sack, and they certainly don't want that for T.J. Watt and can't afford that, looking at how their schedule starts on the road in Buffalo. But Mike Tomlin said, look, T.J. Watt is this, like, physical freak. He's a specimen. He is not regular, and so we can't operate under how regular players or regular people would need a ramp-up period. T.J. Watt doesn't need that. He's also been participating in individual stuff. He's been conditioning off to the side. The biggest thing is just, can he absorb the hits that come with live drills and live practice and live games this quickly? But I don't think there's any real concern for him being able to do that, to get up to game speed on Sunday, no matter when this deal gets done.
Brooke, switching over to the offensive side of the ball, one of the areas of this team that really struggled last season was that offensive line. A lot of new starters on that offensive line. What are people inside the building saying about the outlook of that group this coming season?
You know, one thing I thought was really interesting that Tomlin brought up today was, look, they put Zach Banner, who was supposed to be their right tackle, starting right tackle, on IR. The ACL injury from last season didn't progress the way they thought it would. His recovery didn't progress the way they thought it would. So they moved Chukwuma Okorafor back to right. And now they've got a rookie, Dan Moore Jr., starting at left tackle. He is number one in the depth chart. And Tomlin said today, we didn't quite anticipate that his floor would be as high as it is. And so I think that they feel more confident than they did going into training camp with this offensive line. I mean, trust me, there are still a lot of questions. A big one being, wow, you guys had an extra week of preseason, and it still took until over halfway through to get the entire line together on the field, who they thought would be the starters. Then a week before the season, week and a half, Banner goes on IR, and you have to shuffle it all over again. So I think the continuity and the chemistry is a big question, but I think they feel like they at least have the pieces, even if they're young, like a guy like Dan Moore Jr., and a rookie like Kendrick Green. They're young. There's going to be a steep learning curve, but they feel like that group can get it together. But man, they don't really have a lot of time to deal with the steep learning curve when, you know, you're trying to protect a 39-year-old quarterback and a first-round running back.
A lot of change around Ben Roethlisberger, around this Pittsburgh Steelers team. Going to be interesting to see as this comes down to the wire with their star pass rusher in T.J. Watt, trying to get him a deal, trying to get it on the field. Brooke, thanks so much for the time. We're looking forward to talking to you plenty during this season. Best of luck and enjoy week one.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome stuff from Brooke Pryor. You can check her out at @bpryor on Twitter. Coming up next, though, we got to ask one man where it all went wrong last night and figure out the biggest surprise from the opening weekend of college football. We'll get to that after this word from DraftKings. Now is the time to celebrate, guys, because the NFL is finally back, and DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL, has millions of reasons why you should get excited. To kick off the football season, DraftKings is giving new customers a free shot at $1 million top prize, with a total of $4 million up for grabs for Thursday's opener. Get in on Thursday night's single game showdown is easy. Draft six players from the season opener, stay under the salary cap, and then see how your team stacks up against the competition. So head to the app now. Feel the action, NFL action like never before with a free shot at $1 million payday. Download the DraftKings app now and use code CJR. This week, new customers get a free shot at the $1 million top prize and $4 million in total prizes. Enter code CJR to get a free shot at $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's code CJR only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We're going to college next on ESPN Radio. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're brought to you by Goodyear. With you for every mile on the road to greatness, Goodyear, more driven. We will get to, because we got some news around here in the Northeast. UConn head coach Randy Etzel announced that he is stepping down immediately after announcing that he would finish out the season before retiring. And good news for UConn, we've already found the replacement for your coach. So coming up in about 10 minutes, we got you. We have done the job search. No need to go any further, Chris. We've got everyone on lock here.
Yeah, that thing escalated quickly with Randy Etzel, didn't
it? God, yeah, that
I'm
was
just
a,
saying.
That got
yeah,
ugly.
I'm going to step down after the season. Psych, you're actually going to get kicked out of the building right now.
Yeah, it sounds like the locker room wasn't on board for that that whole end of the season, take your victory.
What gave it away, the first two games?
Yeah, watching the guy who is now going to be the interim head coach get completely airmailed on the attempted high five there by the team, it's all going great. So again, help is on the way in about 10 minutes, but right now we got to head to the Goodyear hotline to talk to our friend, former Louisville Cardinal, great former NFL wide receiver, Harry Douglas, who you can also catch on ESPN Radio's College Game Day on the weekends. He's doing a million digital shows with our buddy Jason Fitz. But Harry, we got to start off with last night, man. You were an honorary captain. I was so excited for you as Louisville and Ole Miss were facing off in Atlanta. What happened?
right, first, Mike, I got to tell you, Chris, I still have beef with you from when we played y'all in a playoff game in New York, and I look across the huddle, and all I see is Justin Tuck. All I see is Olsen. All I see is Big Chris Canty. I'm like, man, can these monsters get even bigger? Can they get any bigger?
That ain't my fault, man. You know, we was trying to get somewhere. At least we ended at least we ended up finishing the drill, though, right, Harry? We won the whole thing, right?
Trust me. Trust me. I know because Matt came to the sideline and was like, hey, guys, do not run your routes the full depth. Just cut your route, cut the depth short so I can get the ball to you because that's the way it's going today. And we was like, no problem.
He was getting ready for some of those Remember the Titans lookout blocks there. And frankly, I don't blame him.
But Mike, man, last night, man, first of all, being able to be the honorary captain for the school I actually went to and learned so much from that city growing up there during those times where I was in college was amazing. Right? The outcome definitely wasn't the outcome. And for Louisville, I'll tell you, like, when I was watching that game, right, I'll tell you the first drive of the game for Ole Miss, and they went down the way they did, I turned to somebody and I said, Louisville's going to have to be in press coverage because Matt Corral being a Heisman Trophy candidate coming into the season, there's too much free access, right? So I was like, okay, to disrupt this thing a little bit, you're going to have to go press coverage. And then there was a few things I seen Louisville offensively was that I thought everything was entirely too deep, right? The inexperience of the wide receiver group, I thought could have been helped up a little bit more just by making things quicker and making things quicker for Malik Cunningham as well because he was running for his life all night. And then there was a few times where I seen where they went three receivers to one side, but the person that was guarding number three inside was like 8 to 10 yards off. And I'm like, just pick the ball up and just throw it to him. And I can remember the times being in Atlanta with Matt Ryan where we would see things like that, and Matt would just literally abort the play and just pick it up and just throw it to me, let me gain 15 or 20 or 10, another first down. You know what I mean? So it's just little things like that. But Louisville had it rough last night, and Ole Miss, for the first time I've seen in a while, played with some physicality. Like, it was some hitting going on in that game, and them not having Lane Kiffin, I thought it was going to be a factor, but it was a non-factor. But the way they came out physically and imposed their will, I was like, man, okay, this Ole Miss team has some physicality to them.
Harry, I want to ask you about the game that took place in that same building a couple of days earlier, that Miami-Bama matchup. Now, coming into that game, Miami head coach Manny Diaz promised us a whipping. I'm pretty sure that the way that game unfolded wasn't what he had in mind, and his guys wearing a turnover chain when they were down by 27 in the first half was just beyond me. But let me ask you this. When we looked at that game, you saw how dominant Alabama is. When you start talking about the SEC, is it them over the field?
Right now, yes, it is. And I hate to say that because I love so many other college football teams, and you want things to be even out across the board. But if we're keeping things real, Chris, it's not like that. Alabama, I'm telling you, Alabama this weekend, if they would have played Georgia, if they would have played Clemson, would have probably blew them out as well. Alabama right now is on another level from everybody else in college football. You look at that defense, and we spoke about defensive line because, Chris, I think about you again and those big hogs up defensive line that played a part of me not getting a chance to win a Super Bowl. But they got DJ Dell. They got Mathis. They got Christopher Allen. Now, I hope he's not injured too much. But then you got Will Anderson Jr. coming off that edge. You got linebacker Chris Harris. Like, they're just you plug them in and they just play. You look on the offensive side of the ball, you got Bryce Young coming in who played exceptionally well. And I thought Bill Belichick, I thought Nick Saban and Bill O'Brien did a great job with their young quarterback understanding this. Okay, let's get him in a groove early. So what are we gonna do? We're gonna let him get the ball to our best receiver, Metchie the third, and let him go from there. And what I love from Bryce Young is that they had a play where he rolled out to the right down by the red zone. And instead of forcing it or trying to just run it just because, he just threw it out of bounds and lived to play another down. So that told me right there that he's coached properly and he understands the game and he's not going to lose the game for Alabama, but he's going to be one of the centerpieces on why Alabama wins so much.
Canty and Golic Jr. talking to Harry Douglas, host of ESPN Radio College Game Day, and former Louisville and NFL wide receiver with us on the Goodyear Hotline. Harry, you watched a lot of football this weekend, took in all of these games. We talked about a few of the big ones, but for you, biggest surprise result of this weekend, who shocked you the most outside of the games that we just mentioned?
Ooh, I'm going to have to go with the Virginia Tech North Carolina game. And I said this on a podcast actually before that game. I was like, this is not a good matchup for North Carolina in game one. Just because I like what Virginia Tech presents defensively. Their secondary is physical. They have a guy, Jermaine Waller, who's going to be another high pick in the draft. They have a guy at the defensive end position that I'm trying to get everybody on named Amari Barno, right? He led the ACC last year in TFLs, 6.5 sacks. He had a sack and a half in his first game and had 3.5 TFLs in that game. But he just started playing the defensive end position a few years ago. So he's nowhere near his ceiling. So his upside is unbelievable at that position because he's balling and he doesn't even have the true experience at that position yet. So just imagine where he's going to be in another year when he goes to the NFL, when he has these NFL coaches coaching him and he can be at the facility as long as he wants, just learning any and everything. But I'm going to have to go with Virginia Tech. And right now I'm counting on Virginia Tech. Two teams I'm counting on in the ACC. Because the ACC had a rough weekend now. I'm counting on NC State because I think NC State, they had a good year last year going 8-4 with Dave Durn. I think he's doing a great job. But when you look at them, their offensive line is decent. Their quarterback is decent. Devin Leary came back from the injury he had last year. But they have their three deep at receiver. They have two solid running backs who both went over 100 yards. And scored a total of 4 touchdowns this past weekend, and Donovan Knight and Ricky Person Jr. I'm high on them, and I like Virginia Tech. I like what Virginia Tech presents. But those are two teams right now, and then one more, Boston College, who can try to make this thing not look so lopsided when it comes to the ACC.
Harry, let's stay with the ACC. One of the teams that surprised me was Florida State. Now, I mean, they lost to Notre Dame in overtime, but I didn't think that game would be that competitive, and it feels like Mike Norvell has a little bit of a quarterback controversy on his hands down there. Who should be their guy under center moving forward?
Chris, I'll tell you, going into every show I did, going into the first college football weekend, I thought Mackenzie Milton was going to go in and be that starter. Because I go back to when I seen Mackenzie Milton at Central Florida and the job he did there, and I thought he had a good enough spring in camp to push Jordan Travis to win that job. That's not what happened. We go out there and we see Jordan Travis throw 3 interceptions. And I don't know, like, I don't understand why coaches wait so long to do things or why they don't be scared to make these decisions. We've seen Nick Saban make these decisions. We've seen Dabo Sweeney make these decisions when it comes to these quarterbacks, right? If you have a guy and this guy gives you the best opportunity to win, you put him in. Like, that team was like a totally different team when Mackenzie Milton got at quarterback. And I'll tell you another thing. I wish they would have ran the ball even more with Corbin because I like what he brings to the table. And if they can ride his coattail until everybody comes along for as long as they want. But I was thankful to see Florida State in a college football game against a top 10 opponent. I actually picked Florida State to upset Notre Dame in that game. So you know I was like, dang. I was somewhere, right? You mean that was close. You know what I mean? It was a close game, guys. It was a close game. But I actually picked them to beat them because I thought Mackenzie Milton was going to be the starting quarterback. But transfer from Georgia, Jermaine Johnson. Ooh. Listen, that man's a beast. He's a beast, man. Number 11. If people don't know who Jermaine Johnson is, number 11, defensive end for Florida State. He's a dog, and he will be playing on Sundays.
If you didn't learn his name over the course of Sunday night, I don't know what game you were watching because they were calling it an awful lot. Harry, you're the best, man. Everyone, check Harry Douglas out on ESPN Radio College Game Day. All over our college football digital shows on the weekend. An absolute beast. We appreciate you, brother. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
No problem, fellas. Thank you.
I did feel dirty. I was like the only person on earth, I think, Chris, rooting against what was maybe the greatest comeback story in college football this season going on Sunday night. I had to take a shower after that game.
I know, man, but that was a heck of a ball game. I mean, it's surprising that Florida State's kicker missed the 37-yarder in overtime, but he made the 43-yarder to push it into overtime. So really unbelievable how that game unfolded. But I'm with Harry on that one, man. Mackenzie Milton should be the guy moving forward for that team. I don't even think that's a question.
No, got to be the guy. I was terrified when I saw him putting on a helmet and going into that game. So that lets you know the respect that he commands. Coming up next, though, as UConn turns the page on its head coach, we need someone who's going to command the respect of that room to turn the tides on that program. We have just the man for the job. We'll get him to you next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty with you guys, and we'll get back to plenty of what's getting coming up. It's week one of the NFL. We've got games starting on Thursday with Dallas and Tampa Bay getting ready to rock. But, Chris, we had news over this weekend, and normally this doesn't register on the Richter scale much because UConn's been a bad football team for a while now.
Yeah, like, exactly.
This isn't much new to a lot of people. Like, it really has been since Dan Orlovsky, our ESPN NFL analyst, was running the huddle for the Huskies back in the early 2000s that they've been anything to write home about. But it was announced that their head football coach, Randy Etzel, who originally had said after their loss to Holy Cross this weekend, 0-2 on the season, that he'd be stepping down and retiring at the end of the season. Well, him and athletic director Dave Benedict apparently came together and talked and said that, quote, it's a mutual decision that is in the best interest of the UConn football program for Etzel to step aside immediately. Chris, I guess everyone wasn't on board with the victory tour for Randy Etzel here on the way out.
Yeah, we know that wasn't a mutual decision, Mike. Come on, man. Stop it. Like, Randy Etzel, a couple of days ago, was talking about how he was going to step down at the end of the season. For him and the athletic director to huddle up and then to all of a sudden mutually decide it was best now to part ways, like, that was the AD and the people, the higher-ups at the university saying, our football program is so embarrassing right now. The first two games are so bad that we got to get rid of this head coach immediately. That's how all of this stuff went down. Randy Etzel didn't want to step aside right now. They forced his hand. They forced him to get out of the building. And now they're going to turn it over to a guy that doesn't necessarily feel like he's the one in terms of being able to get things turned around this season.
Yeah, no, current leadership does not seem like it's equipped to handle these problems here. And so now UConn's got a tough task because, listen, the last round of conference realignment crushed UConn in a way that few other programs felt. And I don't know if they'll ever recover, but if they're looking for a new head coach, I got a guy. Because Ted Lasso's been pretty popular lately. For anyone that hasn't watched the hit TV series, essentially American football coach from Wichita State coaching American football goes across the pond to coach AFC Richmond. We got a guy here at ESPN Radio named Liam Chapman. He's British. He's a huge Liverpool fan. Loves soccer. So we figured the reverse lasso might be a decent way to go. We let Liam audition. So here is Coach Liam's pep talk for the UConn Huskies.
All right, lads, gather around, gather around. Here to give you a big, big kick in the knickers. You need it. We're down, what, 10? 10 with 5 left in regulation. That's not counting stoppages. That'll be an extra 3, 4, 5, depending on how many times it goes out for a throw. Sweeper, mark them up at the far post. Don't use your hands. When you're trying to tackle, use your legs. And don't worry about the yellows and the reds. I've got all those. I've got two in my pocket here, see? Intensity is not a perfume. Striker, come here, son. Listen, look me in the eyes. God, your breath stinks. Don't worry about it. You got to strike it like a crusader. You, take it to the corner. Kick the corner in. He's going to head it. Bob's your uncle. We've got it going. And finally, for the lot of you, play like you want it. Attack, attack, attack. Play with the heart. Play with the heart of the lion. The three lions. Under no circumstances do you play like a husky.
Anyone else just get chills? Is that just me? Chris, I think we got it for him. I think we did it. No search committee necessary.
No, we don't got to have one of those search firms. I think we got it down pat. Liam Chapman is their guy. Like, that's, listen, I'll say this, Mike. They can't do any worse than what they already got. I mean, 6-32 over the last 3 years. It can't be any worse than what has already been happening with that program.
UConn, go ahead and call us. We'll draw up the paperwork. Liam Chapman is ready for the job. Now, in the meantime, you can also download the Overheard podcast for curiously delightful conversations overheard around Nat Geographic's headquarters, presented by the City Advantage Platinum Select Card, the card built for your next adventure. And what an adventure would be if we could get Liam over coaching the UConn Huskies here. Play like a lion, not a husky, although Jonathan the Husky, probably not the one to blame in all of this. So we'll keep trying to, you know, fight the good fight on that one for the hometown team here. But coming up next, as we get ready for Sunday, as we get ready for NFL football to kick off, we'll find out if one of the sport's biggest stars on defense is going to be out there representing for week one with his team. We'll get to that next here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.